Welcome back to Develop Lex. We had the pleasure this week of hosting David O'Neill. David is the property value administrator, which doesn't sound super exciting in theory, but David is such a fun guy to talk to. Ross, what were your thoughts on the interview?
There is not a day where I'm not on the PVA's website. For any of you all that are not in the real estate world, but are wanting to get into thinking about stuff, the PVA's website is rich in data and does a lot more than just provide assessment, has zoning and all that. But getting into David's interview, it is really a great one for your data points about how Lexington's supply and demand work, economics, and the rest.
Yeah, it was amazing. And he's such an approachable guy. We talked about this, but such an approachable guy. A data junkie. So we did a general commentary on data as it relates to just Lexington home and commercial values. If there's anybody in the city that knows data about real estate, it's David. Chances are, if you own a home, he knows what it's worth. So and can tax you or can come up with a value to tax you on it. So yeah, David was an awesome interview. Hope you guys enjoy. Welcome back to Develop Lex. We are sitting here at the Awesome Inc. studio, and today we are stoked to have David O'Neill, who is the Property Valuation Administrator for Fayette County. David, did I say that correctly?
Commonly known as PVA.
PVA.
Yeah, people like the shorter version.
PVA for Fayette County. I'll let him explain what that actually means, but if you ever go on to FayettePVA.com, that all of the values for all of the properties in Lexington are derived through Fayette or through David and his team, which is obviously a large job. But I will let him kind of explain that process. I thought it would be a really unique perspective to bring David in today, because if you own a home or own a commercial property, you in some way are tied to the Fayette PVA. That's where our tax assessments come from. And I think there's a lot of ambiguity in that. I was actually explaining that to David before the interview started of I feel like a lot of people I know that are very intrinsically involved in real estate still don't really understand how property valuations are derived. So we're going to get into that, a little bit of the nitty-gritty, but first we want to get into David's background. And so I will let you introduce yourself formally. So David, welcome on.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. David O'Neill, the PVA. Some people they'll say he's with the PVA or with the PVA office, but my title is actually the PVA. But I don't do it all by myself. I have a staff of about 20 that help me out. There's about 114,000 parcels of property in Fayette County. And we not only value them for tax purposes, but we're also required by law to physically go out and look at every one of them. So we've got a lot going on in the office. So my background is mostly in data management. I worked in horse racing for about 20 years. I worked for the Jockey Club, which is the breed registrar for thoroughbred horses, and their subsidiary Equibase Company, which is the official database for horse racing. And I started with them the day they went into business, January 1 of 91, and worked my way up to senior operations manager. But most of the time that I was there was managing bulk data. We have, for those of you who are into horse racing, you probably know Equibase and Equibase.com. It's where you go to get your forms and your past performances and that type of thing. So my background was a lot of online retail data management. And so that translated pretty well into the PVA office. So thank you for mentioning the website. And that's, you know, I'm very proud of that. I think that'll be my legacy. We worked pretty hard to take this wealth of data that's always existed in PVA offices, but nobody ever used it or knew they had access to it or even knew, you know, that it could be used for data-driven decision-making. And so I've worked pretty hard the last dozen years or so to get that out there and make people aware of it. And I think it's a great resource. And I know guys like you and the industry use it extensively, but I think everybody should use it.
Yeah. I will give David a shout out. If you are a subscriber to the Develop Lex newsletter, we get all of our sales comps through PVA, and they are always obviously accurate. But the actual process, if you're not closely involved in real estate, for the most part, you have no idea the leaps and bounds that our county is typically speaking above other counties in terms of the flow of our website and the accuracy of the data, and how easy it is to use if you're actually a real estate professional or somebody interested in real estate, compared to other counties. And I don't think that's a dig at other places. That's the hard work of Fayette PVA. So that's one thing. So, David, tell us a little bit. Well, one, horse racing. I had no idea. That's really interesting. I could probably talk about that for a long time. But two, kind of tell us how you got into the role you're in today.
I've been a political junkie my whole life, and I'd always kind of had in my head that I wanted to be in public service and hold public office someday. But I'm not a policy wonk. I'm more of an administrator. I'm more of a roll up your sleeves and get stuff done. So, you know, that narrowed the jobs down quite a bit. That, you know, I didn't want to be a legislator.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, looking out at the county landscape, that left pretty much two jobs. I could either be county clerk or PVA. And at the time, my name wasn't Don Blevin, so I couldn't I couldn't be county clerk, senior or junior, you know.
Yeah.
So, and PVA, it just ended up being a better fit for me because of the data side of it. You know, bringing all that data out of, you know, the file cabinets and bring it out to the public just fit my skill sets perfectly.
Yeah. How long have you been the PVA?
15 years. 15 years this week, actually. And it blows my mind that I've been in this office that long. Thank you. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so if somebody walked up to you, let's say somebody on the pickleball court walked up to you, me and David both play pickleball. We've seen each other at Kirk Levington. Let's say somebody walked up on the pickleball court and asked you what you do, instead of saying, I'm the Fayette PVA, how would you describe what you do?
It depends on if it's somebody locally that I think might know the term PVA, then I'll say that. Typically, I'll say I'm the property tax assessor. You know, different jurisdictions have different names for it. Some call it, you know, tax assessor or tax commissioner, that type of thing. It used to be tax commissioner in Kentucky until about the mid-70s, and they changed it from county tax commissioner. And, you know, I guess that's when people started to want to distance themselves from the word tax, you know. So, but I think it's more self-explanatory, tax commissioner than property valuation administrator. It's kind of a boring title that begs for some type of explanation. So
yeah,
that gets tiring sometimes. So typically property tax assessor is what I say.
Gotcha. And if you had to describe, this is a loaded question, if you had to describe your day, say you got into the office at 9 and you're leaving at 5, what does your day actually consist of?
So I've got, like I said, I got a staff of about 20 people, and we've got different departments. We have we play a pretty good role in motor vehicle taxes, especially right now because the statewide they're rolling over a new system, and it's been just an absolute nightmare, as you could imagine. A state government agency switching software systems, you can imagine what a nightmare that's been, and it has been. So, if you you know, a portion of your vehicle registration when you go to get your tags renewed, a portion of that is actually property tax on your vehicle. And so if you've got excessive damage or excessive mileage or something like that, there's some reason why your car really isn't worth what NADA or Kelley Blue Book says it's worth, then you can contact our office and we'll review it and can make an adjustment. So we're pretty busy from that standpoint. Cars that are out of the ordinary, usually the state gets a download from NADA once a year of values. But if it's an odd car or an antique or something like that, those values don't exist. So we have to come up with them. So when you go in and renew your tags, if for some reason there's not already a value in the system, you have to call us and we come up with one. Same with boat trailers and that type thing. So there's that piece of it. We administer the state's homestead. So that's for people who are 65 years of age or older or disabled. You get a discount on your, so to speak, on your property taxes. And so we administer that. We process applications. We send out applications to people that we believe are turning 65 and you know, take those off and put them on when properties transfer. So that's a department. We also have a GIS department. We are required to be able to identify every property on a map. And so those aren't paper maps in Fayette County anymore. They they are still in some counties and some jurisdictions, but we're fully, you know, electronic on GIS. And that's a skill set that we have to go out and recruit for. That's not something we can train in-house. And so that can be difficult. And then the rest of the office mostly is placing value on properties. We've got you did mention that our sales and our comps are current. And so we've got somebody who goes to the county clerk's office every day, picks up copies of deeds that were put to record the day before, and then we day enter those and put them in our system. That's where our sales come from. So always put your deeds to record, please. It's not a requirement. You don't have to put a deed to record in the county clerk's office. If you have a mortgage on the property, the bank will require you to do it. But it's not mandatory. So, but the vast majority of them do. So that's how we get our sales comps information, is we get copies of the deeds every day.
That's a fun fact. I did not realize that was not. So if you buy a house cash, you don't technically have to.
Yeah. So where we would see that before is houses that would sell at the master commissioner. Mm. It's not uncommon at all. Maybe half of those sales, the deeds would just never show up.
Gotcha. Is that less of a problem now?
It's less of a problem now because this is kind of an interesting aspect of what's going on in the real estate market. So it used to be that just about anybody could go to the master commissioner sale and pick up a house for 60 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
You know, but the wholesalers have gotten so good at fleshing those out, mm-hmm. and getting in front of them that they don't even make it that far anymore. So, you know, they're selling for almost retail now, the master commissioner. So yeah, it is less of a problem now.
Yeah, I was actually having this conversation last night about how advanced some of the techniques behind wholesalers or people that are trying to wholesale houses have gone, and how early in the process they're able to figure out that a house would be going into foreclosure or would be even on like an alert.
Yeah, so you go to the clerk's office every day, every couple of days, and look through the list pendants and see where, you know, banks have initiated the process of a foreclosure. And then you go out and beat those bushes, and you can, you know, cut it off before it ever gets to the sale.
Very interesting. Okay. So that is kind of what your day-to-day looks like. And I want to get into actually deriving values for properties, because I feel like that is a commentary that most of the public, if you live in Fayette County, either your apartment that you live in, the house that you rent, or the house that you own, will be in some way, shape, or form touching David's office. There is an assessment at some point.
Yeah, it will be assessed one way or the other. Right.
Yeah. So how do you derive assessments for people's properties?
It depends on the type of property. So for residential property, the vast majority of those are done through sales, comparable sales. So let's take a neighborhood, for example. So Masterson Station, right? So we'll get all of the sales and we'll study the sales and determine which ones are actually legitimately arm's length transactions. You know, it's not not a foreclosure, not a transfer between family members, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So we want to make sure that it's an actual arm's length transaction exposed to the market for some period of time, really reflects market value.
Gotcha.
And so those sales end up being the comparable sales that we then use to reassess the whole neighborhood. So we have a fairly sophisticated computer software that helps us with that. So it'll break down a sales price and determine what, you know, how much value to give for differences in square footages, and whether it's one story or two story, and how many bathrooms it has. Does it have a garage or not? Does it have a basement or not? Is the basement finished or not? So we got a software that helps us make all of those adjustments, and then it'll spit out a value. It'll identify five comparable sales for every piece of property, and then make adjustments for how long has it been since the sale happened. So, you know, some people will look at their comp and the comp is for $200,000, but the sale was a year and a half ago. So chances are, at least in the current climate, the property value has gone up probably another 10% on a year and a half old sale.
DevelopLex is sponsored by SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe.
The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
So just for clarity purposes, you, David O'Neill, are not individually going out to people's houses and investigating and then giving them a value out of the sky. Is that accurate?
That's reasonable. Yes, that's a reasonable assumption. So we are the only government agency that I know of that's required to go physically look at every piece of property, and we do. So we've got the county divided up into about 300 residential neighborhoods, and we reassess a fourth of those neighborhoods every year. So it ends up being we reassess 25 to 30,000 houses a year, and we do it on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis. So the way the PVA neighborhoods work, they may or may not correspond with neighborhood association boundaries or subdivision boundaries. When we form a neighborhood for the purpose of reassessing, what we're looking to do is make the properties within that neighborhood as homogeneous as possible because it makes it easier to reassess, right? So I use Masterson Station as an example. There are fewer different floor plans in Masterson Station than average, right? So it makes the comparables much more accurate. Whereas a neighborhood like Chevy Chase, you know, where every house was custom built, and, you know, 100 years worth of variances and how much they've been modernized on the inside. So some neighborhoods are much easier to reassess than others, but they're all based on sales comparables.
Gotcha.
And so we have, again, we have a fairly sophisticated computer software, and I've got about a dozen people that work, whether they are hands-on assessing out in the field or they're more peripheral help of looking at property values and helping us get to those values.
Gotcha.
Now, that's residential. So commercial is a little bit different. Most commercial property is assessed through income. So if you look at an appraisal, there are three generally recognized methods for arriving at value: sales, which we've already talked about, income, and then the cost approach. The cost approach we use almost exclusively for new construction. Once the building has been completed and it's been occupied for a while, the cost approach becomes less and less effective. And so income, most commercial property is sold and valued based on its income generating potential. So the easiest way to explain that is an apartment complex, right? The market drives what you can get in rent, and the amenities and the market drives what you can get in rent. And so for an apartment complex, what you're willing to pay, if you're an investor and you want to buy, you know, let's say you want to buy this fourplex, what you're willing to pay for it is directly related to how much you're going to be able to get in rents. And so we look at the rents, we figure out what the gross income is. There we give an expense allowance that's usually driven by how old the apartments are. So a fairly new apartment complex may have 25% of income a year in expenses. An older one that requires more maintenance, you know, it might be 60% of the income goes to expenses. And then we apply some type of a market cap rate that's reasonable, what you would expect for an investment like that, and that's the value. It's your income divided by cap rate is what the value of the place is. So that's how we value most commercial property.
And how are you actually getting to those rent numbers, and how are you picking a cap rate at this point in time?
So we study sales, you know, right? So you can back into those numbers by looking at a sale. So if a fourplex sells for, you know, $1 million, and we know what they're getting in rent, you know, then we can back into cap rate. So we look at kind of what the local market is indicating the cap rates are. We also use, depending on what industry sector we're looking at, we might use, like, Boulder Group, for an example, is a company that I go to and look at cap rates for things like triple net leases on drugstores and that type of thing. So yep. That's kind of where cap rates come from. And then we just look at the market and, you know, I look at your website. You know, I've looked at your listings to see what you're listing them for. The ones that are listed for lease are particularly helpful, mm-hmm. right? Because that gives me rent information right off the bat. And so great. Then we build that into a model.
Great. Shout out SVN Stone.
Exactly. Yeah. I appreciate you putting that information out there. So, yeah. So you know, we've got commercials a little bit different. We don't have 300 neighborhoods like we do for residential, but we still have quite a few, maybe a dozen or so. And so then we build models based on that particular area. Like, for example, the Harrodsburg Road Corridor, Palomar, Beaumont, that's in its own neighborhood. Southland Drive and Harrodsburg Road, kind of inside New Circle Road up to downtown, is in its own category. The mall corridor and around Reynolds Road and Lexington Green and the Summit, that's a different neighborhood. And so then we have kind of rent ranges within that neighborhood. So, you know, the Harrodsburg Road neighborhood, for example, that's Palomar and Beaumont, probably a much smaller range of rents over there than, say, maybe a downtown or a north side neighborhood. So, you know, the rent range right now, we're doing office space for 2024. So that's what's going to be reassessed on the commercial side. We do that a little bit different than residential, the quad every year that we reassess is neighborhood driven, and commercial, it's more use driven. So we'll do office space 1 year, retail 1 year, multifamily 1 year, industrial and everything else the other year. So this year it's office space. So, you know, the rent ranges for office space in the Harrodsburg Road might range from maybe $15 to $30 a square foot. Whereas, you know, maybe on the north side, it's $8 to $30 or $26. So, you know, it's complicated. Commercial is actually more difficult. You know, with residential, we have so many comps. Even in a year like 2023, where the number of sales was down significantly, we still have plenty of comps to be able to base values on. Not necessarily the case with commercial. Commercial, we have to be a little bit more creative.
Yeah, and I do want, because you are a wealth of knowledge, I want to be able to hit in our short time just commentary on the market. But I am curious, from that point, what do you see transactional volume going at? Like, what is kind of a trend in transactional volume across commercial asset types right now in Lexington? General commentary that can be focused on asset type, that could be focused on just general transaction volume, sale size, anything like that. Something that would be interesting for the listeners that are involved in that space to
know. I haven't noticed anything other than just what you would suspect. Like, since COVID, the number of transactions in office space has been down. I think it's back a little bit now, but, you know, when we back 21, 22, when we didn't know whether or not anybody was ever going to go back to work in an office again, you know, the number of transactions were down. Retail's been trending down for quite a few years now. So, you know, about 10 years ago, maybe even a little bit longer than that, Hamburg sold for like $175 million. It was the biggest real estate transaction on record in Kentucky at the time. Wow. And it's not assessed at that level now, just because retail sales and brick and mortars has been trending downward.
Yeah.
Not the case with multifamily. You know, we have such a housing shortage, you know, that property values in multifamily have gone up significantly. You know, I can remember maybe when the Balls built, I can't remember the street name now, but it's out towards the Summit. They built a new apartment complex out on the McMahon or the Mahan properties out there. Okay. And it was a really big deal that they sold that apartment complex for like $102,000 a unit. Like, wow, we've never seen an apartment unit sell for over $100,000 before. Yeah. And now, you know, that's doubled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Super interesting. All right. Well, that's in regards to asset type. What would you say general commentary on the Lexington market, I guess the Fayette County market, would be right now?
So like most places, we have a housing shortage. And so some people will tell you that our shortage is even further aggravated because we have an urban service area. You know, in most jurisdictions do not have that. And the urban service area, you know, is this kind of this artificial boundary that says you can develop land inside this boundary, but you cannot develop land outside the boundary. So most of us live inside that boundary, 90% of us, but yet there's all this land outside that is protected from development. So, you know, that's kind of an artificial restriction on the supply of land to build new houses on. Now, how much that directly plays into our shortage and our property values, I'll leave that to economists. But we do definitely have a housing shortage, and we've had one for a long time. So if you look back at some statistics, and I give a presentation on this stuff pretty often, and one of the slides that I like to use and gets the most attention is when you look back at houses that have sold each year over the last 15 years or so, back when the recession hit 2007, 2008, you know, and it dropped off significantly, up to the point that it dropped off in 2007, 2008, the number of houses that we sold each year and the number of houses we built each year, you could see a direct correlation. You know, they weren't the same, obviously. We were building fewer houses and we were selling, of course, but the trend line and the curve looked almost exactly the same. After the recession, after 2008, 2009, that's no longer the case. Since that time, we've only built about 500 houses a year, every year. It's just a flat line that has no correlation between the number of houses that are sold. And so that's a significant impact, obviously, on inventory, right? We're not building houses, and we're certainly not building starter houses. So if you look back at residential sales over the last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, or 10 years, there's only a handful, maybe up to a half a dozen houses built a year that sell for less than $200,000. And that doesn't sound like much now that median sale price is $300,000, but you know, not too long ago, that was shocking to people that you can no longer get a newly constructed house for $200,000 in Fayette County. And of that half a dozen or so, you know, some of those are Habitat houses and some of them are built by investors to rent, and they never hit the market. Mm-hmm. So the last couple of years, there haven't been any newly constructed houses that have actually gone on the retail market for $200,000 or less.
Wow.
So no longer building starter houses. So that's a factor. So, you know, so now we have a whole generation, you know, my generation, and I assume, you know, you're old enough that your generation too could expect at some point to be able to buy a starter house in Fayette County. And I'm not sure that exists right now. I don't know how somebody in their 20s is going to buy a $300,000 house.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Stephen at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project of windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say we build with integrity.
Yeah, you are 100% correct. And there are a few factors to that, unfortunately, that I guess we can't control, not just to do with the urban service boundary, but I guess cost of construction now, but then cost of land in Fayette County, like a developer can't
go and buy. So, you know, the biggest factors on what a house costs is land, labor, and lending, right? So interest rates are obviously up. But, you know, historically, there will probably never get back to those days of 2% mortgage rates again without an economic calamity. I mean, that's the reason we had them, is to get money moving again, right? And so it would take something really disastrous for us to get back there. But just prior to that, you know, mortgage rates of, you know, 8%, 10% were not that uncommon. So we're still not historically high. Mm-hmm. Particularly high on interest rates at, you know, 5.5, 6.5 percent, but it is a factor, right? Because that going from 5% interest to 6.5% interest makes for a significantly larger mortgage payment.
Absolutely. Yeah, we bought our house last year at 6.5%, and then, it was on the trend up.
So while we're on that topic, you know, this is people don't usually make this connection, but with interest rates being high right now, is impacting prices because it's constricting supply. So let's say when you were looking to buy your house, you already had a house and mm-hmm. you had a mortgage, and your mortgage was 3%, and now mortgages are 6.5%. What are you going to do?
Yeah,
you're going to sit on the house and try to ride it out for a little while, unless you just absolutely have to. You know, mm-hmm. if you have to move to a different city. So that's what's going on right now. Is there's this pent up need for people to sell their houses and move, but they're not selling right now because they don't want to give up that 2.5% or 3%.
Yeah.
Mortgage rate.
Significant amount of heartburn associated with the fact that just based off purely interest, you are paying significant amount more for that same debt.
Yeah, exactly.
A month. Yes, I've definitely talked. That's a huge conversation I have when I talk to people about selling properties is, you know, we refinance, because it doesn't just mean, I know that you meant this as well, but it doesn't just mean that somebody, you know, timed out the market and bought something at 3% a few years ago. It's like so many people that I know refinance their properties.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Into a really advantageous situation. And now it's like, well, one, they haven't put much down on the principal now because they refinanced. And then two, they just have such good debt. It just doesn't make sense.
Right. I mean, your interest rate's probably going to at least double immediately, no matter what you do, if you give that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is kind of a crazy thing.
And so then there's the labor aspect of it, which I don't really have a good explanation. I don't know why all of a sudden we don't have people to build houses anymore.
Yeah. Land, labor, and lending. I like that. I've not heard that. Is that on the slide? The interesting slide? Land,
labor, in some lending? Form or another, yeah.
If you had to go through any of your other parts of your presentation, is there anything else that jumps off the page of just very interesting topics that people should know about as it relates to Fayette County?
You know, the housing shortage. So my office, along with the builders and the realtors, Downtown Development Authority, Fayette Alliance, all got together several years ago and did a housing demand study to try to look at not just from a consumer preferences standpoint, but just based on statistics, just based on looking at historical trends and the increase in population each year. How many houses are we going to need each year into the future? What type of houses? Are they going to be single family detached? How many townhouses, duplexes, all that? And so some interesting things came out of that study. It's dated now, but there's still a lot of useful things in there. And one of the most surprising things that we learned out of that study was of all the jobs in Fayette County, about 51% of them are held by people who don't live in Fayette County. Mm. That was a huge wake up to people. And about a third of them are coming in from more than one county away. So bedroom communities like Lawrenceburg and Mount Sterling and areas like that. So, you know, that's kind of a thing that bigger cities have dealt with for years, that younger generations have to just get in their car and drive until they can find a community they can afford to live in, right? And that's kind of a new situation in Lexington. It used to be that, you know, people who wanted to stay in Lexington could afford to stay here. And now, I don't know if it's just because we've reached some critical mass of size that we now, you know, look like other cities where we have to go to surrounding counties to find a place that we can afford. But that was probably the most interesting thing that came out of that.
Yeah, that's a scary statistic.
Yeah.
51%.
Yeah, 51% are worked by people who don't live here in the county, and a significant number of those are even coming from more than one county away.
Yeah, which you're right. If you talk to somebody, it's funny, if you talk to somebody in any big city, call it Chicago, I went to UK, every person I met was from Chicago, and then you say, well, are you actually from Chicago? And they're like, no, I'm actually from an hour and 15 minutes away. I'm from Aurora.
So you actually live inside the loop. Oh, no.
Yeah. So that is the case. Same thing with Atlanta. Same thing with New York.
Yeah.
Most people don't actually live in that, you know, actual spot.
Right. So we've never really thought of ourselves that way. But now we're kind of being forced to. It's like, oh, yeah, we are dealing with some some bigger city type issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what was the, if we were to address, and I'm asking you this with no preparation, if we were to address the housing shortage of what we would actually, you said it was around 500 houses are being built a year.
Right. So the number coming out of that demand study said that we, based on how much we were growing each year, and our population was growing at historically at about 1%, maybe a little bit more percent a year. The average household size is 2.2 people. And based on all that, we needed to be adding about 1700 units of housing to our inventory every year. And from a single family detached house standpoint, we were only adding 500.
Wow.
Now some of that other, we were adding others in townhouses, very small amounts of townhouses, but in multifamily and apartment complexes, we were continuing to build those. But even in a very good year, we might only add 1,100 or 1,200 units of housing a year. Still 500 short.
Yeah, just getting there. You're still below.
And so, you know, we've been operating at this deficit for a long time now, you know, so now we've got all this pent up demand, and we have lost a lot of people to other, you know, communities who may or may not come back. And one of the big problems with having, you know, forcing this many people to surrounding communities is when, and you understand this, you know, trying to bring companies into Lexington to buy a commercial property or to lease a commercial property, they're going to go where the workers are.
Mm-hmm.
So if the workers are now in Anderson County, not in Fayette County, then that's where the jobs are going to go.
Yeah. Anderson County then gets, and a lot of the new things that are coming there, people are targeting those workers.
Right. So Scott County, Georgetown is a much better example because they have actually been growing at a faster clip than Lexington has for years now, for 10 years or so. But I think they've gotten to the point now where they're, you know, people are even having to look beyond Scott County because their infrastructure cannot support building the volume of homes that they need.
And is there any sort, I just assume there is, but is there any sort of conference or any sort of like mastermind almost group of PVAs that you connect with that give any sort of commentary that would make you think that Lexington is unique in that way? Or is this like an often troublesome point for places right now?
I think that the more urban areas, it is unique to the more urban areas. So the rural areas, you know, don't have the same type of problems that we do. So, you know, as a group of PVAs, we get together several times a year. We have conferences and we share information, but it's usually a little more along the lines of the day in and day out aspects of how to do the job, how to run the software, how to operate the GIS stuff, how to interpret the motor vehicle laws, and
telling war stories of people complaining.
There you go. Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. We all have war wounds.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'm sure. Okay. So then I guess that kind of pushes us towards maybe thinking in a future tone. What do you see? Obviously, you've been very involved and understand the market probably as good or better than anybody in Fayette County. As to where values are actually landing. What are you interested in, call it, for the next 10 years for Fayette County of how we can address some of the pain points that we're dealing with right now? I know you're not necessarily a magician, but are there solutions that immediately jump off the page?
I think, you know, you've seen one play out this year, and that is, you know, it looks like the council and the planning commission are moving ahead with expanding the urban service area and bringing at least a few thousand acres in for development. You know, again, I guess I'm a little bit skeptical on how big of a factor that's going to be on inventory. You know, I don't really see those subdivisions being, you know, Masterson Station type starter, you know. They were starter homes at the time, you know, when Masterson Station first rolled out. So I don't know that these are going to be starter home developments that we see. You know, they're probably going to be more like 400, minimum up $700,000, $800,000 houses. So it'll be interesting to see how that really affects inventory and stabilizes pricing. But at least it's some movement in that direction. For the last, this expansion of the urban service area is the first one we've had since 1996. That's a very long time, right? Yeah. So our growth strategy as a community through all of those years has been infill and redevelopment, right? So since we're not expanding the urban service area, that means all new units of housing have to happen inside. And so there's a limited, the people who have pushed back against expansion through all those years have claimed that there's roughly 5,000 acres of land available inside the urban service area. But you really have to figure out how much of that is actually available. What does available mean? Because a big chunk of that 5,000 acres is Overbrook Farm, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So how motivated are the Youngs to sell Overbrook Farm to build houses on? Not particularly, right? And so there's other pockets of land the same way. Developers have not been interested much in infill and redevelopment because it's, more overhead, it's more government involvement and getting zoning changed and, things like that, trying to figure out how to put a fourplex on a single family lot, that type of thing. It's more difficult to develop infill and redevelopment than it is just to mm-hmm. go into a, development land and start from scratch. So we need to get better at that, at infill and redevelopment. We also need to get better at the NIMBYism. And for those of you who are not familiar with that term, it's an acronym that stands for not in my backyard.
That's like Ross's favorite acronym of all time.
So the one that you all are familiar with and your listeners are familiar with. And it is a legitimate problem. It really is. So, and one of my slides is I go back and I've pulled all of these headlines off of Herald Leader, off of Kentucky.com. And, for as long as I've been in office, every single proposed townhouse development, you can go find a headline on Kentucky.com that says, faces neighborhood opposition. Mm-hmm. They fight every single one of them. For some reason, there's this stigma that, the American dream is a single family detached house on a lot. And anything other than that, you're potentially devaluing my American dream. And so we don't want it in our neighborhood. And we've got to get past that. We've got to get past this notion that the only way to be successful in home ownership and capturing the American dream is a single family detached house. There's nothing the matter with townhouses. So that's another thing that we got to get better at. We got to get better at allowing density.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, what would you say, and just as we wrap up, forward-facing Lexington question, what do you feel like you're most excited for project-wise, or anything wise in the city of Lexington right now? Is there anything over the next few years
I think that we are starting to be more open-minded with some density. And so I think that really is what the answer is going to be on this pent up demand and lack of supply. And so I guess I'm excited that maybe we're finally turning a page.
Yeah, absolutely.
Turning a page there.
And I think that you're right. I think that obviously that's just continued conversations, hopefully like this one, that people kind of understand.
Just to give you a really quick example. So, like I said, our strategy has been infill and redevelopment, and our comprehensive plan is kind of laid out. Here's the way we're going to approach density, and we're going to center it around the corridors. So Nicholasville Road and Harrisburg Road and Winchester Road and Versailles Road. We're going to start building up density and along those corridors. And so somebody who owns some land on Nicholasville Road across from Central Baptist Hospital wants to build some townhouses on land that he's owned for years and years. Townhouses directly across the street from Central Baptist Hospital that you could very easily see being occupied by doctors or interns and nurses. And the neighborhood just threw an absolute conniption fit and got their council member to help them push through a historic overlay, you know, because these townhouses weren't going to be in keeping with the, you know, the look and feel of the neighborhood. So they ended up with, you know, four, you know, they're nice houses, mm-hmm. but I don't know how they're in any way, you know, symbolic of the other houses in that neighborhood, but it's just a very good example of how, you know, we can lay out this plan. Here's how we're going to go about it. But then once it gets to the neighborhood level, you know, it's...
Yeah, you need neighborhood participation. You know, you need everybody to buy in.
And, you know, that's... unfortunately, I think that historically that's been the role of a neighborhood association. Their default position is no. And sometimes that serves them pretty well because then you can negotiate things like, you know, better sidewalks and landscaping and noise barriers, and that's fine. But just absolutely no, not in my backyard, no attached housing. We got to get well past that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as we wrap up, I do just want to say thank you for your years of service to Fayette County.
Thank you.
The website, legitimately, I know that, people will probably, some people won't ever go look at the website. You really should go to.
You really should go see it. And here, if we have a couple more minutes, we were going to talk a little bit about the process. So for homeowners, the process year in and year out is exactly the same. So we reassess a fourth of the county every year. We shoot for April 15th every year. Notices hit in mailboxes and the new values go up on the website. So on April 15th, April 16th, go log on to the website, look at your house, see if it has a new value. On that webpage, you're going to find the five comparable sales that we use to arrive at your value. You're also going to find a PDF copy of your assessment notice, which, much like the website, I'm very proud of. We looked around the country and found the best standards out there and brought them here. There's not another PVA website I know of in the country that has comps and sales maps on the actual assessment notice. And the reason that's a good thing is because we're arming you, the homeowner and the taxpayer, with as much information as possible to come back and argue with me on how these comps aren't right and how we got your value wrong. And that's what we want, really. We're not doing appraisals. We don't go inside the house. We're using the sales of five houses close to yours to then make some assumptions on what the value of your house is. And there's 114,000 properties. We can't know everything about every property. So the process is meant to be iterative and collaborative. So when you get the assessment notice from me in the mail, that's step one. Here's what I came up with. Now you come and talk to us and tell us why we missed it. If you think there are better comps, please show us and we'll take a look at them. And so, you know, just like any other government office, there's skepticism out there. You know, oh, it's not going to do me any good. I'm not going to call down there. You know, they've made up their mind. They've got a budget number they're trying to hit, and none of that is accurate at all. We really want to hear from property owners. So use the website from that standpoint. There's a lot of cool features on the website, especially in the mapping section, layers that you can turn off and on.
What I use all the time, zoning, historic overlay.
Yeah, the aerial photography. And aerial photography, you can go back in some areas 15 years on the aerial photography and see how property has changed over time. So for the most part, you know, it's free. If you start doing hundreds of searches, then you're going to trip a wire,
yeah,
and we're going to charge you for a subscription. That's, you know, and that's a state legislature thing that if you're using the data commercially, you should pay for it. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing that many searches in a month, then you're probably doing something commercial, but you know, you
two guys like Weston.
Guys like Weston need to pony up
our paid subscribers. But it is really nice that you offered to waive my fee for having you on Development. Right. That was a really nice perk of this interview. Any other interesting things about that process that you'd want to share with people before we wrap up?
Yeah, so April 15th is a big year. That's when we get the new values out there. So then you contact us and talk to us if you think that we missed it in some way. If we come out of that conversation where you're still feeling like you're not being treated fairly and equitably, and that's what we're shooting for, not that you're happy about paying more taxes. None of us ever are, right? My goal is to make sure that you're treated fairly and equitably like everybody else. And if you still come out of that process feeling like it's not fair, then you can file an appeal with the local board of tax appeals. And I think you should serve on the board at some point, if you don't mind, for that subscription. And then coming out of that, then the next step is to go to the state board of tax appeals. And I do not appeal residential property out of the local board. If my local board says, sorry, David, you got this one wrong, then I take the slap on the hand, I learn from it, and we move on. But property owners are welcome to move on to the next step, to the state board. We don't get a whole lot. Usually that's commercial property. For example, like I've been sued by Walgreens every year since I've been PVA. And that kind of expands and contracts to include some other national brands and triple net leases over the years. You know, Kroger and Home Depot and Lowe's, and some of those guys are frequent flyers.
I'm sure. Well, that's an interesting thing I would have never thought about. Well, cool. Well, David, I think really, again, to emphasize, I feel like the goal of this interview was, one, so people can know you, two, so that people actually understand the process more. And I feel like you very much, even for me, who is in, I promise you, out of 365 days of the year last year, I was in the PVA. You can probably check this. I was in the PVA, I bet 320, 330 of those, just because it's needed. So takeaways from this interview, absolutely go log in, check out the website, understand how values in our city work. I would say too, we'd probably go play pickleball at Kirk Levington so you can play with me and David at some point.
Yeah, let's go. Let's get some spring weather here.
Yeah, those are my takeaways. Awesome. Thank you for coming on, David.
Thanks.